Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on the Revisionist Report on Tuesday, August 16th. Hopefully able to give you the program I had planned for yesterday. Just so you know, there was nothing wrong with my internet connection. I was there as usual, but no one else was. Well, things happen, and people don't always react in the smartest way, including me. Yesterday morning, it seems that no one did, so the fault or blame goes all around. That said, I will today go into what was covered on last Friday and make some clarifications and comments of my own. The subject was Adolf Eichmann, a person who has been made into another one of those iconic devilish figures of the so-called Holocaust. He is right up there with Joseph Mengele, whom Wilfried Hanke also talked about last week, being as a particularly evil mass murderer, both of them, with no conscience and all of that kind of stuff. So the favorite word to use when speaking about these two men is chilling. I know the British newspapers especially like to use that word. Now, in talking about Eichmann, Wilfried used a lot of material from a German woman, Gabriella Weber, which he knew was speculative and has more questions than answers, but he believes the questions are worthy of attention. However, he didn't know that I had looked into this type of material she was accepting in some depth and found it wanting. So he just found it interesting and worthy of putting forward. But I don't have as good an opinion of Gabby Weber for that reason as perhaps he has. He actually told us that Weber writes for German news services. But since all news that's allowed in Germany is of the re-education variety, that's not necessarily a recommendation. I actually did several radio programs on another network, and some as a guest on Deanna Spingola's program on this network, debunking another part of what Weber writes about, which is the Bush family Nazi connection, as it's called. So this can be turned into a big story on its own. But when we come back from our first break, I want to give my take on how Adolf Eichmann should be viewed, in my opinion, and also on the German atomic energy program, in which I don't think he played any part whatsoever, either before or after the war. Now, I want to make clear that Wilfried Hanke is both a friend and a colleague of mine, and I respect him highly. And this is not any reflection on him, but I just feel because I have been involved in these issues in the past and I have very firm convictions about certain things that I need to give my take on this following what he talked about on Friday. So, and then you can all make up your own mind. So I'm a little bit ahead of myself here. So I will just start right in already with Eichmann, that he was, in my opinion, well, I think actually, factually, he was not half Jewish. That's a rumor, but there's no evidence for it. Now, that big liar, Christopher John Bjerknes, has an article on his website from 2007 titled, Adolf Eichmann was a crypto-Jewish Zionist Nazi. And he writes that according to Haneke, okay, here we go now, and when we get back, ladies and gentlemen, I will continue with this.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Have you heard? Proactive is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-489-0192. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactive risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now. You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactive Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-489-0192. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactive.com or call 1-800-489-0192. That's 1-800-489-0192.
Berkey purification systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. Berkeys are used worldwide under normal, hostile, and emergency environments. Securing your access to good-tasting, sparkling, wholesome drinking water can be harder than you might expect. Water is often laced with chlorine, lead, high levels of harmful bacteria, and other unwanted chemicals and contaminants. Even bottled water can contain these contaminants, and moreover, it's expensive. Other purification systems are inferior. Most do remove pathogenic bacteria, and many remove the beneficial minerals that your body needs. Perhaps that's why Berkey systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. This simple, highly effective method of microporous, self-sterilizing, and recleanable black Berkey purification elements bring you the finest water purification system available anywhere. Call today, 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Free shipping for a limited time only.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Carolyn Yeager with the Revisionist Report, and I am going to be talking about Adolf Eichmann today. I've already gotten started, and I have said that, number one, he was not Jewish or partly Jewish. That is a rumor. And I was telling you about Christopher John Bjerknes, who some of you may have a good opinion of, but since I called him that big liar, you know that I don't. And now I was saying that he has on his website an article titled, I'm going to repeat myself because it can't be repeated enough, really. He has an article titled Adolf Eichmann was a crypto-Jewish Zionist Nazi. Now, whatever that means, you know, kind of strange way of putting all those words together. But he uses a book, Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel, a book I have really more than criticized in the past, by Henneke Cardell, or Cardell, which states that Eichmann was a full-blooded Jew. Well, according to Cardell, and according to Bjerknes, all National Socialists were Jews. And this is typical of this whole book of Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel, which is quoted all the time by those who want to, you know, do this name-calling. But it really shouldn't be. It should not be believed at all. So the facts about Adolf Eichmann are, and which can be accepted, there's no reason not to. You know, in this conspiracy, in the world of giant conspiracies where everything is a conspiracy, no facts at all that have been accepted for a period, you know, for a long time, it can be believed. Everything is suspect. Nothing is true, and they make up their own stories and say, well, this is what really happened. So here we have, though, Adolf Eichmann, born to a Lutheran family in Solingen, Germany. His parents were businessman and industrialist Adolf Karl Eichmann and Maria Schifferling. Now, nowhere do I find any reputable source saying he was Jewish. This came up more recent times, and I think maybe it's backed up by the idea that because he did extensive work with Zionist Jews, because of his position as SS Untersturmführer in the Jews section of the SD, which is the Jewish section, or they call it the Jews section, of the SD, which is the SS Security Service under the Hitler regime, from 1937 on. So therefore, because he dealt with Jews so much, you know, somehow it got around that he was Jewish. He had joined the Nazi, the National Socialist Party in 1932 or 1933. You know, to my mind, he was basically a loyal German and a loyal National Socialist. Now, I don't think that Eichmann was number two. I don't think Eichmann was allowed, in quotes, to live in Germany from 45 until 50. I think it appears he was in hiding, and he succeeded in evading capture by the Allies, who were the only law in Germany. And it wasn't the Germans who were looking for him or for any of these men. They didn't have any power to do anything, although they were working for the, a lot of them were working for the Allies. But they may not have had any desire or much will to do so. And I don't think the Allies had a great strong will to do so. It was basically always the Jews that wanted to find all these people that they had, that they considered and were naming as mass murderers and so on. Now, Wilf said that he believed that Eichmann was trying to save Jews, in quotes, and succeeded with, quote, hundreds of thousands, unquote. You know, I'm taking this directly from Friday's show. Directing them into immigration rather than to deportation. Well, I was a little surprised at that. I'm not saying that there's that he didn't do some of that, but I don't know. I haven't seen myself evidence of hundreds of thousands. And why would Eichmann do it unless he really were a Jew and a Zionist, which I don't think he was. So, you know, I want you listeners to understand that I see this, you know, a little differently. Wilf said Eichmann spoke Hebrew. No, I don't think so. Upon my questioning, he said that that was only what he heard. Well, you know, Wilf knows that heard is all right if you're just chatting about a subject, which I guess we were doing. But if you're presenting evidence, heard is not good enough. So I think that Eichmann knew some Yiddish, as I said, and since definitely he dealt with Jews, and he spoke German, and he was a smart man, he probably did speak Yiddish. But that cannot be used, and I'm not saying that he spoke, you know, that doesn't mean he spoke Yiddish as a true Yiddish speaker. You know, he may have been able to communicate in Yiddish. That's a little bit different than speaking it, you know, as a natural person who grew up with as a Yiddish speaker. But that cannot be used to prove anything about Jewishness, really. So, you know, all these things are used. He said, well, he spoke Yiddish, and then it turns into Hebrew, and then, well, that means he was Jewish. No, see how these things go. Now, Eichmann did do some deals or propose some with Zionists, like, for example, Rudolf Kastner. So I'm going to tell this little story that they give about Kastner. And keep in mind that these stories are generally a bit exaggerated and changed and so on if need be, but the basic story goes that between May and July of 1944, that was during the time of the Hungarian deportation, Kastner negotiated with Adolf Eichmann to allow 1,685 Jews to leave for Switzerland instead of being sent to Auschwitz, which they, most of them were being sent to Auschwitz on this massive deportation of Hungarian Jews. And of course, it said that they were being sent to their death, but that is not the case. They are being sent there to be a labor force and to be sent to other places and so on. What became known as the the 1,685 Jews that somehow got promised to be able to go to Switzerland became known as the Kastner train, and that was. Deal was done in exchange for money, gold, and diamonds. Now, there is no source for this statement on Wikipedia on the Rudolf Kastner page. This story does not even appear on the Eichmann page. I think it might be more of a Jewish legend. That is, some Jews were allowed to go to Switzerland on a special train arranged by Kastner, while the majority were not, but the story may have been twisted to make Eichmann look as bad as possible instead of the Jews looking bad. Now, you know, how this deal was actually done, I don't know. But, you just have to take it and say there's probably some truth in it, but might not be the way quite the way they put it. Another story involving Eichmann is the 1944 Blood for Goods deal, much better known, or otherwise Blood for Trucks, or Lives for Trucks, Jews for Trucks, and so on it's known as. This is an offer Eichmann made through Joel Brand, who is a slimy Romanian who grew up in Germany and became a communist. I'd like to tell more of his story, but I don't think I should spend the time at that. He acted as an intermediary. This deal was to trade European Jews to the Western Allies for 10,000 trucks and other goods. Now, nothing came of it. Everybody agrees. And historians can only guess whether Eichmann's offer was genuine or some kind of trick. Whatever its purpose, the deal was thwarted by a suspicious British government and by the Jewish Agency for Israel. They weren't going to have anything to do with it. So their reasons have been a subject of bitter debate ever since, particularly among Hungarian Holocaust survivors, some of whom say it was an unforgivable betrayal. And you know how they go on and on about things like this. The real truth of that, I think there was such a thing, but how serious it was. Because, it's the Allies and even the Jewish Agency seems like they didn't really want to save anyone if it meant doing a deal with Hitler. That's really kind of the bottom line. They weren't going to do a deal with Hitler. So they didn't care. Truthfully, if all these Jews went to their death, it was going to make the Germans look bad. Now, they weren't going to their death anyway. They were going to labor camps, but there was a lot of danger in labor camps, especially from disease at the end of the war. Which everybody has to share the blame for, just as I talked about at the beginning of the program. Some things, you know, are everybody has to share the blame because everybody was doing things wrong. And usually it's a failure of communication or a stiff-neckedness. But anyway, now Wilf tells us that Gabby Weber's book, is revealing all her damning information, but that it has had no sources. This book that he bought, that she had written, something about Socrates, questioning Socrates. When he questioned her on that, she said that she found it in the archives. She found this information in the archives in Argentina. But her whole case is based on the fact that she found nothing in the archives. I mean, that's the whole thing. She went to the archives and didn't find what she was looking for. And the fact that that documents were classified somehow makes her speculations credible. I don't think so. This is exactly how it works with that Bush-Nazi connection that I studied. They say, well, we have this and we have this and we're looking for the missing links here. You know, but they can't find the missing link, so they say, well, the missing links have been covered up, destroyed. You know, that's what they say, and therefore they make their case by putting in the missing links of their own choice, which doesn't work. That you can't do it that way. So, all right, we will be back with this, ladies and gentlemen, in 3 minutes. Stay tuned.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesen, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372 or visit TerraVim.com.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Report, and I want to, before I go any further, I want to invite callers, if anybody wants to call in and make a comment or ask a question on this subject, at 1-800-313-9443. Most of you know that number very well. All right, continuing here with Adolf Eichmann, Wilf mentioned an organization called LAKAM. LACAM, but anyway, it's acronym LAKAM, which is an Israeli organization in charge of building a bomb for Israel, supposedly. I guess it is, you know. They were the ones who kidnapped Eichmann, he said, according to Gabby Weber. Now, Gabby Weber says the only way the Israelis could get the atom bomb information was from these German scientists. I find that rather astonishing. That's an assumption, a speculation. From there, she makes up that Eichmann was a key figure in this, and that's why he was grabbed and taken to Israel. Well, that's even more of an assumption. So he wouldn't tell. What he knew, you know, as though he knew something, and now this is the reason for it all. Now the Germans. She goes on, the Germans and the Israelis worked together on shutting him up. This plot is, as my opinion, made up of flimsy claims with serious missing links. Again, typical of these leftist anti-Nazis that put this out. Typical of the Bush-Nazi connection and all of this. Now, at a later point, Wilf said, she says she has evidence, good solid evidence, that the Israeli government knew, at least by 1957, where Eichmann was. But Wilf has no idea what this evidence is. Maybe they did know, but where is the evidence? Why did they do nothing about it? that's the question, and she answers, because he had a job to do for them. He helped them obtain the material to build their atomic bomb. Well, again, you know, that's not known. That's part of this whole scenario that's been created, that he was involved somehow in knowing how to build an atomic bomber involved with these scientists. I haven't seen anything that states that, or that shows any evidence for that. So this is, she asked, why was he put on trial then? She was asked, somebody asked her, why was he put on trial then if he was working for the Israelis? And she answers, his mistake was that he started to talk. Oh, come on. All right. Now, my reason for bringing all this up, I don't think even this Gabby Weber believes all this. I do suspect, and now here's my own big, maybe you might think a big conspiracy theory, but I do suspect it's part of a larger effort, and people are probably joined in this effort just spontaneously and doing their own thing in it because they share the beliefs. These people, including Gabby Weber, are leftists and basically anti-German, even though she's German. Because they think differently. You know, they hate nationalism. They hate anything nationalist, and they want to stomp all that out. So I think this is part of creating attacks against the German government, whatever German government, but especially the Adenauer government after the war. Now I'm just throwing something out here, but my own reading and feelings lead me to this, but this is just an idea that I have because I just wonder about these people. I can't find they because they're liars, just like Bjerknes. I mean, they lie, and they say they have documents. They say they have evidence that when pressed, they don't have. And I hope that Wilf continues following up on this. Because I think that he will find, in the end, that none of her claims to evidence really hold up. Now, to go on, the idea that Eichmann was out in the open, another idea that I would say, I don't think that's true, I don't think his children were going to school in Argentina using the name Eichmann, as he said. I think this maybe came from Weber also, and I don't think that's true. I don't think they would ever have done such a thing. Now, here's what Eichmann said to Life magazine in 1960. Now, I don't know if this is an actual interview. I'm confused with this, whether this is an actual interview with Life magazine or if Life magazine got hold of his some memoirs that he wrote and then published this under that. But I think they questioned him. This was in 1960. He was in custody with the Israelis, you know, at the time. So you have to take that into consideration. But I want to just say some things that he says. Now, this could be totally wrong. It could be falsehoods being stated. It could be from Life magazine twisting things, but I don't think they could actually do that. It could be Eichmann twisting things around. But I'm just going to say what he said here, okay, and I will do that. After the break, when we get to our longest segment. Stay with me.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is an important message from hempusa.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit hempusa.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid 3 times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and I'm talking about Adolf Eichmann today. And I'm just going to make a quote, some sentences from this Life magazine interview from 1960. And you can find this online. Just Google Eichmann Life magazine interview 1960. He says in this, I started off in one small American prison camp posing as a Luftwaffe corporal named Barth. Now, this is, you know, right after the unconditional surrender. Then he says, after studying the psychology of the American CIC, he says, I changed my rank from corporal to second lieutenant in the SS. Lieutenant Eichmann, Otto Eichmann, became my name. Now, I think he could have done that because things were just, they were just rounding people up. And things were just kind of in flux at that time. So, he went from one place to another, and he changed his, he decided to change his name for what he first started out with. That could be. Now, he says, I was transferred to a large POW collection center in Wyden. And he said, and in these months, we were being interrogated quite a bit. And he knew that because, of course, he was an officer. He knew that if the interrogations continued, this is what he says, I might come under suspicion. So I decided to escape. Now, he tells us that there was an unwritten code of honor that amongst these POWs that no officer would escape without his fellow officer's approval. So he had to have a officer's meeting called, and they gave their approval to him. They didn't know who he was, or he thought they didn't, because he was calling himself, you know, Lieutenant Eichmann. But anyway, he did, I don't know, he just says he just left the camp. Now, I don't know how they escaped that easily, but he's a pretty sharp guy, and anyway, he did get out of that camp, according to him. And he said, after leaving the prison camp, I managed to procure papers which gave my name as Otto Henninger. And this is what is established, that that he went as under this name for quite a few those years in Germany. He says he lived in one of the wooden heats in the cell area. He was he said he was shown a pile of newspapers with articles about himself. They had headlines like mass murderer Eichmann, or also they were looking for this one who had escaped. He said, where one article was, where is Lieutenant Eichmann hiding out? Then he says, through the intervening years since then, people searched for me in vain. Now, he doesn't in this interview talk about being in Argentina, but I went to this book that I really know is a crummy book by Mark Gatto, something hunting for Eichmann or something. But that's the only thing I could find, and just right offhand for this program. So I'll just use some of what it said here, how true it is, you know. But he says that despite the danger involved, Eichmann after arriving in Argentina, we know that he got a passport under the name of Ricardo Clement in Italy. He went to Italy in 1950, and he was aided by certain people and organizations there who were helping former Nazis to go to Argentina, and he got a passport and a landing permit, and he went. And he had actually gotten that landing permit 2 years before. And he was taken, when he got there, he was met by, you know, people that were also there to help. And he was taken to Tucumán, approximately 600 miles from Buenos Aires. And he was given a job under the auspices and safety of other fugitive Nazis. Well, this can be, you know, this was far away. And nobody was really hunting for these people. That's the thing. And I don't know that it's so strange. As I said before, the Germans really weren't too interested, and it turns out the Americans weren't either. And so they were now fighting Soviet Union, now in the Cold War with the Soviet Union, and they weren't interested anymore in doing anything with the Germans and the Nazis. They wanted Germans as allies. So he became a supervisor, and you know, but it was still dangerous, but he missed his wife and children. So says that he managed to contact her, and obviously he cared about his family. And she must have cared about him, because she agreed. She was probably living safely in Germany, but she agreed to relocate to Argentina. And in 1952, Vera Eichmann and the three children that they had, age 16, 13, and 10, arrived in Buenos Aires, and a fourth son was born in Argentina. Now, it says that they lived in this rural region, 600 miles from Buenos Aires, among the dense forests and rolling hills of northern Argentina. He made enough money to support them. The children learned Spanish. They went to school there. They had neighbors, many of whom were German. And it says this person, who is not a friend to any of these people, writes that Tucumán was home to hundreds of former SS men hiding from justice. I don't know if there was hundreds there or not, but there were some there. And it says that Vera Eichmann, his wife, changed her name to Catalina Clement, and she got a national identity card. So I assume the children were named under the name of Clement also. But he lived in constant fear of discovery. He started getting nervous. I suppose he was reading things. He began to move from place to place, from job to job. He became kind of a nervous wreck. He said he was in constant fear of being killed. So then eventually he was abducted. Now there doesn't seem to be any way to prove any of this, except by you have to go by what sources you believe. Now, there's not too many sources that these people didn't these Nazis, so called, in Buenos Aires are not talking about this. They're not telling anything. So, you know, it's all just stuff that's dreamed up. This question about another thing that's being done by Gabby Weber, I have to throw this in right here, that and the people that are like her, is to go after the Catholic Church. And there's an article here from 2011, probably one that Wilf has seen, from April, and it's Eichmann's escape helped by German intelligence and Roman Catholic Church. This is just one of these propaganda type news articles where it says that there's somehow German intelligence. This is what she's using, and there was an article in Spiegel based on these secret documents. So you can look that up. Secret documents about Eichmann, Der Spiegel. It'll be in English. Look it up and see what they wrote about it. I was going to do that, but I've been so busy I haven't had time to look at that story yet. But they kind of sum it up here that doesn't seem to amount to much. This one guy was a member of Germany's intelligence organization that helped Eichmann escape prisoner of war camp. I don't know. Eichmann himself stated that many priests helped him escape to Argentina without asking questions. Now, you know, they make a big deal out of this. Look what these priests were doing. They were helping the Nazis. Well, the priests also helped Jews escape. Priests help people escape. Church people tend to do this. And they were helping everybody in Italy. The church was, you know, priests were doing it, other people were doing it, and they had helped Jews too. So, this is really no reason to attack the Catholic Church, but they do, because this is written by Jews. The Jews want to say that helping Jews is a wonderful, wonderful thing, but helping anybody else is a terrible thing, particularly if they're enemies of Jews. Then nobody has a right to do it. You see, so it's all taken from that perspective. And this article goes in talking about Gabrielle Weber, who and what she did and what she's documents she's trying to find and so on, and all of her comments, which I didn't find too, you know, which pretty much are according to what I've said and what Wilf said. So then it sums up, this case shows a high degree of cooperation between the Catholics and the Nazis and how willing German officials were to help Nazis escape. See, this is propaganda, and they really go after the Catholic Church. And I have no love of trying to keep the Catholic Church going, but I just can't help but defend it when it's being attacked by Jewish organizations and Jewish power structure, because they really want to destroy the Catholic Church, because they know it has been in the past a real bulwark of a kind of a right-wing conservative traditionalist thinking. Not kind of, it is. Traditionals. And it's still trying to hold on to that, even though it's been liberalized to death. It's trying to retain some of that, but they want to kill it. So, this kind of thing. Now I'll go back to a few more notes I made here. I hope you don't think I'm picking on Wilf, but I had to use what he said. Wilf said that there was good evidence, solid evidence. No, well, now I'm getting into the atomic bomb. Okay, I'm switching. Finally, I got to the atomic bomb. And I want to talk about that, too, and it looks like I will have some time for it. Wilf said there was good evidence now, solid evidence, that they had the atomic bomb. Well, my answer to that is no, there isn't. You know, I can't say what Wilf is considering solid evidence here or what he's referring to. But I looked into it, and I talked to several people, all Germans, and the fact is, the consensus is Germany never did have an atomic bomb, and therefore these German scientists did not know how to build an atomic bomb, because Wilf said the German scientists knew how to build it. He said that a little later on. Maybe that's what he means about having it. Well, maybe by the mid-50s, I would say, they thought they would be able to do it because a lot of information had come out, you know, by then, and they may have learned what they didn't know before. And it also would depend on having the materials, which will come up in a moment. But they didn't know that in 1945, and they didn't have the materials, everything that they needed. And so Germany did not have a bomb. And Wilf has told me privately that he thinks they did. So, but, you know, these, again, are some of these stories that are put out and kind of what I consider in the science fiction realm. And a lot of people read these things and get a lot of good out of them, they say, but I'm never attracted to them, so I don't read them. So that's just a difference there. Now, about the atomic bomb, the Germans may have had a kind of a dirty bomb that they were working on it, and they had something, but the problems that they had, I've got it. I don't have it very well organized here, so I have to kind of go at it piecemeal. They produced something at which one person says they exploded at a site near Ohrdruf in Thuringia, but it wasn't a real nuclear event. It was some kind of a, you know, attempt. There's an author, Rainier Karlsch, who wrote a book named Hitler's Bomb, which I now think is a little bit questionable, but it's not bad. They did a lot of research. I haven't read the book, but I've read about it. There were work groups that failed, even in building a small reactor. German work groups. Germany had this bomb building program under several, quite a few different agencies or heads or something, and they were all working on it. They all had some scientists working on some part of it, and so there were different groups. But I don't think that building an atom bomb was top priority. And I don't think it was top priority with Hitler. And he may have been sorry for that later. But I really think that Hitler would not have wanted to use an atom bomb. The Germans would not have wanted to use it. And therefore, that's why it wasn't top priority with him. Top priority were these miracle weapons. Not that, but, you know, like these amazing new airplane designs that could, jets and could fly, could reach the United States and do some damage there to make the Americans think again about what they were doing. Stuff like that, and they did have a lot of models, but those were also maybe ready for production, some of them, but they weren't in production. They just didn't have enough time, but they were working on a lot of brilliant things. But I don't think the atom bomb was a top priority. Now, the problem the German scientists had was how to get their uranium enriched in order to get a bomb. They had a few ideas, according to this book, but none of these ideas would have yielded them a bomb within 10 years, which was kind of what they were working at, you know. Or maybe it means that even in 10 years they wouldn't have had one. But Heisenberg, another person said that Heisenberg and some others refused to work for Hitler in this project. They just weren't really working on it. They didn't want it. They didn't want this bomb. And this person goes on to say that that Heisenberg was one of the top scientists that the Germans had, and he was not a Nazi, and he was kind of anti-Nazi personally. He wrote a book afterwards, Responsibility of Scientists, is how it translates, that he and the other scientists that were captured after the defeat by the Allies thought that no scientist in the world would build any government a nuclear bomb. They really were shocked when Hiroshima took place. And they were shocked that Oppenheimer and the rest of them did it, because, you know, they thought that scientists should refuse to do such a thing. And it said that Oppenheimer did not know what effects the bomb could have on the atmosphere. He was calculating other things. But, the bomb builders in the United States, whoops, I've got my, I don't know how I get my mic turned around. I don't know if you're hearing me well enough. The bomb builders in the United States were almost all Jews. And they were Jews who had left Germany and gone to the United States, so these were the monster type people. The Germans really were very worried about some of these weapons. They really didn't want to wipe people out that way. Well, I have used up my long time. I have a little bit more to go, which I will continue with after the break. Stay with me.
Earthquakes, violent weather, unemployment, the economy. What are you thinking? If you're thinking preparedness, be at the next Get Prepared Expo, September 9th and 10th, Springfield, Missouri, at the Downtown Expo Center. Learn how to grow your garden, drive down energy costs, survive inflation, prepare your home, and much more. Meet KWTO's instructors, Vincent Finelli and Mark Wright. Tickets only $9 at GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com. What happens next is up to you. Earthquakes, violent weather, unemployment, the economy. Attend John Stadmiller's What's in Store for You and John Moore's Abrupt Climate Change and 35 other seminars at the next Get Prepared Expo. September 9th and 10th, Springfield, Missouri, Downtown Expo Center. Talk with pros on surviving, preparing, defending, and thriving. Grammy winner Steve Voss will perform live. Tickets just $9 at GetPreparedExpo.com. RBN annual subscribers attend one day free. GetPreparedExpo.com. What happens next is up to you.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract! A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept! That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back, and I'm going to try to finish this up. Now, I was talking about the German uranium enrichment program and so on, and that they had a problem with that. The information I have is that a reactor would have also worked on unenriched uranium, but only if it's moderated by heavy water. Now, the Germans were getting their heavy water from Norway, but the Norsk Hydro site was savagely attacked by partisans, and many ships were sunk by bombs in an effort to stop this, which killed civilians. And the Norwegian partisans were controlled by the British Marine Forces. So this is, you know, the British were behind all that. By sustaining a nuclear reactor for a few years, they would have gotten their hands on plutonium. Plutonium was what they didn't have. They had lots of uranium, but that doesn't suffice for making a nuclear bomb. So the Manhattan Project cost $2 billion and engaged hundreds of thousands of people, And still, it's not sure if they would have managed to build it without confiscating the German uranium in the ALSOS mission, that's ALSOS. I don't have time to go into that, but that was after the war, after the surrender. You know, the Americans made a real high priority push into Germany looking for the where they thought German nuclear projects were going on, because they didn't have the bomb yet. And they were, I guess they confiscated or, you know, stole or got their hands on a lot of German uranium. I'm not sure about that story, but that's what I'm given by these sources. Because, you know, the Americans didn't have their bomb ready before July 16th, 1945. And so Eisenhower was looking for that material at Ohrdruf. And looking at, you know, when he went there and stumbled upon the Ohrdruf camp and then made a big deal out of that, but he didn't spend a whole lot of time there. They were looking in the salt mines for goods that had been hidden away there for safety by the National Socialist Government, and so on and so forth. Now, let me see what else is important to get in here. You know, these German scientists working in Germany were not Jews. Heisenberg was not a Jew, but Einstein was a Jew. Now, this other source says, as far as I know, Heisenberg, as I already said, was not behind Hitler. Many scientists were against the Nazis. I don't know to what degree, but, you know, like in any government that in the parties, in the political parties system, you know, everybody is a member of that nation and government, but that doesn't mean they all support the ruling party or the party in power or the president or chancellor or whatever. So this is not so unusual, but they're still working, at their, you know, for their country. Now, I think I already went into this part. Yes, I did. All right. Now, Niels Bohr in the United States working was also Jewish, you know. So that's just another little thing I've noticed here. Now, the thing that I need to end up with is that, well, this is too early, is that Adolf Eichmann had nothing to do with any of this. And how anybody gets him connected with the atomic program, and that he was in deep contact with German atomic scientists in Argentina, I really don't know. I haven't seen anything. When I talk to people, they say, what? Like, well, he never heard of such a thing. So this is all new, part of this this idea of making a new story about Adolf Eichmann. For what reason? Well, as I say, I think there's a lot of reasons that have to do with the overall political reasons. So I have to stop for now, it looks like, and I thank you for being with me today. And when I come back tomorrow, I'll be doing what I had said I would do today, which would be talking about disinformation, following from some of the things I've talked about today. So tune in tomorrow.